And it is the first week of October. And as always, we find ourselves in Columbus with Mayor Jim Lineup. Thank you so much for having us as we really burst into the fall season, don't we?
You're welcome to come to Columbus. It's hard to believe it's October already.
Yeah.
I just wonder where the summer's gone.
Yeah, right. It's this time of year, we always talk city budgets with all the mayors as we make our way throughout Indiana. And we've talked about pay scales in the city since you were first elected. And some of this is coming to fruition with this salary ordinance. Does this take effect this coming year?
It will, if passed and funded. I mean, the salary ordinance was passed at the last two city council meetings. So if it's funded at the next two, then yes, it'll take effect 1st of January. And, you know, what we're trying to do is, I've been involved in city government for a little over 10 years, off and on, mostly on, but what I've seen is that we typically just take what we did last year and move forward at some kind of a cost of living adjustment that's tied to inflation. And that lockstep approach for all city employees has meant that in a couple places we've sort of fallen out of tune with the market, and particularly in the public safety area. We find that we lose officers, police officers and firefighters to other departments because the compensation arrangement is typically better elsewhere. A year or maybe a year and a half ago at this point, the Indiana State Police raised the wage for troopers across the board, you know, $5,000 a year. And the last thing we want to do is become a training ground, you know, for an agency, for another agency. So, you know, we feel like we need to respond in kind, and you know, it's just I think it's also a little bit of a reaction to the unemployment issue that we deal with all across the Midwest, and that is that it is increasingly difficult to find, you know, capable people for difficult jobs, and so we need to align our compensation with the market. What we have here is a completely different approach than what we have had in the past. I mean, and typically in prior years, we had a salary ordinance that council would pass that would have a low and a high, or a floor and a ceiling with respect to compensation. And what we are going to go to is a different kind of ordinance that has at its start a midpoint, which is based on market values that you know, our consultant has provided to us. And then because we still have to provide a minimum and a maximum, you know, we take 20% off and we add 20%, you know, to that midpoint. But our target will be to get employees to the midpoint over a 2 or 3 year period, depending upon whether they're public safety or not. The public safety folks will get there over 2 years. Everybody else, the non-sworn personnel, will be over 3 years. And so the notion will be that we will, over time, you know, migrate the compensation arrangements or the system we have here in Columbus from what had been a legacy program that was all lockstep based on, you know, inflation, to something that's a little bit more market driven and will allow department heads in time to compensate employees based upon performance, which is something that we really haven't had, you know, before. So yeah, this is our first step. Or the first steps were the passage of the salary ordinance at the last two city council meetings now this Tuesday, and the following city council meeting will be funding that that salary ordinance.
And then the budget has been heard, what, twice now?
Well, no, the budget has not been heard yet. That's the funding part, you know.
Okay.
And so the first reading of the budget will be tomorrow evening at the October 2nd city council meeting. And it, because of the salary ordinance changes that we're making, because we will have a little bit larger increase than, say, what the rate of inflation is right now. I think we're looking at somewhere around 4%, maybe a little bit above 4%, where you might think 3% is a little closer to inflation. You know, two things are going on. One is the desire to pay our employees fairly. The second is that late last year, the county passed a local income tax increase. And so part of what we're going to do is use that money to pay for the salary increases that we're talking about here. And so even though it's a little bit larger increase in global budget, you know, 4% than what we've seen in the past, it's well-funded. You know, we don't, you know, in any kind of risk of, you know, passing a deficit budget or anything like that. So, but that'll first come up before the council on October 2nd, and then a second time, October 16th.
Okay. And, you know, I know many city budgets don't have much wiggle room, but is there anything else that maybe have changed or is different in this coming year budget?
Not really. I mean, we're going to spend a little bit less on some of the capital items. And capital is a broad term that includes everything from street overlays to fire trucks to, a new building or an addition to a building. So we're going to spend a little bit less on the capital side. I think we'll still end up with maybe $10 million that goes for capital projects or 9 point something. And so I think we're going to be well taken care of. But, you know, part of our target, too, is to have a tax rate that is comparable to what we've had in prior years. And so, we're at the same time we're trying to manage the spending, we're also trying to manage the amount that we levy on the property that exists in our community. And again, because of the income tax that, we are receiving, we're not going to need to take the full amount that the state of Indiana would allow us to assess against property. You know, there's a phrase out there that they refer to as the maximum levy. And that's the amount by which, communities can assess various properties. And we're going to be less than what our maximum is by, maybe $1 million or something like that. In the grand scheme of things, I mean, it's a $60 million budget. So $1 million, by the time you get to that down to an individual homeowner, may be difficult to sort of understand, what the effect has been. But I think it's being prudent, with respect to our finances, and it's a place that we are this year in terms of being able to do that. So we wanted to make that opportunity come to reality.
I wanted to get your take on this Columbus Central neighborhood plan that was presented recently, mm-hmm. and we're seeing. I don't know. This is an overall Columbus downtown plan, right? This is looking at more of an area and how that should be developed.
Right. We've got two plans. Excuse me. We've got two plans underway. One is Envision Columbus, which looks at the downtown area, and then this central neighborhood plan is a little bit outside of that. I mean, you might want to think, if you're familiar with the geography of Columbus, that 17th and Central is sort of the midpoint of that. And what we've got there is an older section of town that was originally developed as an industrial park. I mean, if you think back to Columbus in the 19-teens or the 1920s, that was the edge of town. And so if you wanted to build industry, you went to the edge of town. Well, it's no longer the edge of town, it's almost the center of town. And part of what we have to deal with is, how that area transitions, say over the next 10 to 20 years, taking into account transitions that have already occurred. If you think a little bit about the Golden Foundry site, that at one time was the heaviest industrial activity that we had. I mean, a foundry is as intense as you can get. And today, the foundry's gone, and it's replaced by about 3 apartment complexes. And so, that gives you a little bit of a visual as to what we expect to happen here as this previously industrial neighborhood transitions to residential and to some retail. And so the Central Neighborhood Plan is just an effort to try to engage the citizens, explain to them, what the challenges are, get some input back, and then provide some direction. And so that will, if it's approved and it all goes forward, which we think it will, because I think it's a good plan, what you'll see is some changes with respect to zoning. The industrial activities will be de-emphasized, and retail and residential will be emphasized.
I wanted to touch base just really quickly on the National Symposium for Exhibit Columbus.
Right.
I think it just wrapped up this weekend. They were expecting maybe between 1,000, 2,000 people. Any early indication on how it went?
I thought it went pretty well. This is a 2-year program, and this is the odd year, the year 1, year 3, year 5. This is year 3. And this is primarily designed for the professionals. Those folks who are engaged full-time in city planning or architecture or design, and allows them to come to Columbus and sort of think a little bit, with respect to design-type activities. So it's not necessarily geared toward the residents or a person like myself who you might consider to be a layman when it comes to these issues. So even though the attendance numbers are not what we had, say, last year as part of exhibit in the even year, we were pretty excited, to have these people in town, and to kick off what we found last time was a lot of fun. I mean, we just enjoyed the community. When I say we, just enjoyed what happened on Fifth Street up and down that area. We had people out all hours of the day and night, marveling at the installations that were there and enjoying those. And so we're hopeful that we get something similar, this time around in terms of its utility for us and the enjoyment that that came from it. So they introduced to us the Miller Prize winners. There are five. And introduced to us most of the sites. There are still a couple that are up for negotiation, I think. And the winners will be back to Columbus, maybe off and on five times, four to six, over the next year. And then we hope to have an unveiling, about this time next year, say in September. So it's kind of exciting. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do the show on top of another sculpture again next year, I hope.
I hope so, too. Yeah.
I wanted to learn more about what I read in the Republic regarding the city hiring a company to create, I think they called it a train quiet zone. So I've never heard of this before. I guess there needs to be certain qualifications to crossings to keep the train from blowing its horn. Is that right?
Yeah, that's basically it, yeah. The railroads have to follow a myriad of regulations, and a lot of those come from the federal government. And one of those regulations relates to how it activates its horn, how it blows its horn when it approaches a crossing. Now, I'll tell you that it's five tugs of the string, if you will, for the horn. Now, I could be mistaken, because there are residents here who think they just lay on the horn, it just as it comes through town. But what we're basically talking about, at least at the outset, are four crossings. This would be State Road 46, 5th, 8th, and 11th Streets. And the whole notion would be to allow the federal government to alleviate the requirement to blow the horn. And what we're told is that if we make certain improvements to the crossings and enhance the safety at those crossings, then that can be done. And there are other examples in Indiana. I mean, Muncie, I think, was the most recent that I'm aware of that instituted some quiet zones through its downtown area. And part of the reason for this is, you obviously have residents who are trying to sleep at 3 in the morning, and there's not a lot of traffic, at 3 in the morning, so it's not like we're blowing the horn for, 1,000 people. But you also have some commercial activities. I mean, the Hotel Indigo here is right next to the tracks, and we also have some anecdotal information that indicates that if you book a room there, you want to be on the east side of the hotel, because the west side, faces the railroad. And that's a concern that we'd like to alleviate. So, as our understanding is that if we pursue certain safety enhancements at the crossings, these would be gates that come down, and then some kind of dividing apparatus that would prevent people from trying to sneak around the gates. There's a way to separate the traffic, the lanes, so that people don't, find it easy to try to get through the safety process. The intersection that we have today at 46, which will soon go away with the overpass, but the intersection that we have today at 46 pretty much meets the safety guidelines. I mean, it's got the traffic barriers front and side, and so if people want to know what we're talking about, I mean, it's that kind of a thing. Now, trying to do that at 5th Street and 8th Street will be a little bit of a challenge, because there's just not a lot of room there. 11th Street might be a little bit easier, but that's the whole notion, is to hire somebody who has done this in other areas, sort of understands the regulatory framework, so that we can, when we make an application, we have an expectation that it's going to get approved.
And this comes, though, to a cost to the city to be able to upgrade each of those to, about $1 million?
It could be that much. Again, we just don't know until we get into what they're going to require us to do. We don't have much leverage, when it comes to the negotiation that you'll have. We'll have either with the Surface Transportation Board or with the railroad. I mean, they say, if you want this, this is what you have to do. And then we'll have to make a determination as to whether or not it's worth it. We've been told to expect $200,000 a crossing. I outlined four, that'd be 800, but I don't know that we have too much to do at 46. I think, the other three are going to be problematic, but we just won't know until, somebody comes forward with a design, and then we go get it priced out. Sure.
You know, you may have heard the Indiana Supreme Court nullified Indiana code where cities could fine trains for blocking roads for a certain amount of time. Did Columbus ever issue fines?
We never ticketed.
No.
And the fine that we're talking about there is one for blockage of the crossing, and we really haven't had too much of an issue with that. I mean, the trains that are long typically don't stop here. I mean, unless they don't stop unless there's a safety issue. It's just not been a problem here.
You know, we talked before on how Columbus and Bloomington could partner to help with this tech incubating development called Dimension Mills in Bloomington's Trades District. Both cities alike, but they're different too. And Mayor Hamilton saying how each city can contribute something to the economy in this area. These talks are still going on, aren't they?
Right. We have had a couple of conversations with Mayor Hamilton and residents there in Bloomington who participate in the Dimension Mill activity. And we're kind of excited about it. I mean, you know, Columbus and Bloomington are different in many ways, but I tend to view that as complementary. I mean, the yin-yang thing, kind of thing. And so we're hopeful that we can both learn from one another and develop a little bit closer relationship. My sense is that the state of Indiana is going to expect communities to adopt some kind of approach to regionalism. And, you know, both Columbus and Bloomington have regions that aren't very big, you know. I mean, so the opportunity for us to work together and try to get some of the synergies that might come from being a bigger area, I think would be important. And this will be the first test of that. So I'm kind of excited about it. Hopefully we'll have something to announce here in a couple of weeks, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I believe they said Dimension Mill would be open by the end of October, and here it is October already.
Right.
I did drive by it, and you could tell it looks a lot different than it did back earlier this summer.
Yeah, I've been over there, not recently. I mean, not in the last month or so. So it's kind of exciting to see all this stuff develop.
Well, we'll look forward to an announcement, and hopefully we'll be there to cover that
as that
happens. I wanted to bring up something, too, that I've seen has been making the news or talk of the town and the Republic, and that's some town halls scheduled to discuss some of the complaints serving the homeless. I think this is about brighter days housing.
Yeah.
What do you know about that? Is this something the city is worried about?
Well, Brighter Days is the name of the homeless shelter that we have in Columbus. And the people, it's located in East Columbus. Primarily a commercial district, but some of the residents nearby and some of the business operators nearby have complained about an increase in certain kinds of undesirable activity. And so that undesirable activity may be loitering. It might be, people who litter. I mean, and candidly, some of the litter may not. We're not talking styrofoam cups here. We're talking needles and other activities that you just don't want to see. So part of what the city is trying to do is, number one, understand the problem. You know, we want to make sure that we react appropriately, and it's trying to make sure that we understand how severe it is or or how severe it isn't. I mean, are we talking a small issue or a large issue? I mean, if you're if you're in the neighborhood and you're next door, it's a large issue. From the bigger surrounding area, it may not be quite so. And so, number one, we want to just understand the scope of the problem. Number two, we want to try to understand what it is that we can do. I mean, if the issue is somebody who's fallen asleep on a park bench, I mean, that's not illegal. It may be disconcerting to the neighbors who are nearby, but that's not, an illegal activity. And so we have to be cautious with respect to our response to that. I think as much as anything, part of what we need to make sure understands is that there's communication between the people who run the shelter and the folks in the neighborhood. And again, I hate to phrase it this way, but it's not the city's shelter. You know, it belongs to the Columbus Township Trustee, and it's managed by an organization here in town called Love Chapel that, is a social service agency. And so they, I think, bear the responsibility primarily for the neighborhood and communication with the neighbors, and we're going to try to do everything we can to help facilitate that. At the end of the day, I mean, we've got a population in Columbus that needs some assistance. And if they don't go to the Brighter Days homeless shelter in the evenings, well, they will go somewhere else. And we think that the individuals, as well as the city as a whole, is better served with those people at the homeless shelter. So we want to try to do what we can to facilitate that and take care of some of the issues that seem to have cropped up.
Mm-hmm. You know, last time we talked about the city proposed purchase of Fair Oaks Mall, turning it into an indoor sports complex. The latest update, the city is actually hiring a consultant, so that progress is happening.
Yeah, we're moving forward. You know, I tend to joke from time to time, you know, we talk about the speed of light and the speed of sound. Well, we move at the speed of government. You know, and so it takes us a while. We're pretty thorough, and there are a number of different boards or agencies whose approval that you have to receive before you can move forward. Plus, we're going to partner with Columbus Regional Health, and so you know they've been a pretty nimble organization, pretty good to work with. But you know, you have to work with your partner and make sure that whatever decisions you make are joint decisions and work for both. So we've hired a project manager to sort of help us sort through some of the legal issues, just in terms of trying to keep things moving. You know, we don't want things to sort of sit around while we're waiting for the next step. And so we've got a variety of legal issues that need to be addressed. Some of those include the relationship between the city and Columbus Regional Health. Some of those include the actual purchase document itself between or with the current owners of the mall. We've begun to hear a little bit from tenants, you know, who might be interested in lease extensions. It's really not, we're not in a position to respond to that yet, but just being able to field those calls is something that we need a little bit of help with because it's time consuming. We also have some due diligence activities. There'll be an environmental analysis and structural analysis of the building. And so, again, you know, we hired a project manager to sort of help us control all that and just keep it moving forward. Because everybody at City Hall or everybody in city government had a full-time job before we bought the mall, you know, so they really didn't need a mall, you know, to try to manage. And so this is a temporary position and just part of the cost of, you know, making that kind of an acquisition.
Well, that was all I had, but I'm sure there may be a couple things you want to mention before we leave today.
Well, I would just go back. You know, we've talked from time to time about the railroad project, sure. The overpass project, and it is moving forward. At this point, Indiana Department of Transportation is really, you know, it's their project. They're managing it. And they are engaged in right-of-way acquisition or real estate acquisition. They've completed, I think, their appraisals, and they are in communication with the property owners. And so hopefully that can get wrapped up here within the next few weeks, if not the next month, and we can proceed to, you know, whatever comes after that. But we're still looking, and I still want to emphasize to people that, you know, NDOT intends to start construction in the third or fourth quarter of 2019, and they'll be complete probably in the fourth quarter of 2020, I think would be a good would be a favorable outcome. And so that means as the railroad increases its traffic, that there will be a period of time, and it could be a year, if not two, where we have to deal with the increase in traffic without the overpass. So we just, helps on the way, the cavalry's coming, but you know, you just gotta have to be patient, you know, with us while we work through that. Our ASAP, you know, continues to move forward. ASAP is the Alliance for Substance Abuse Progress. One of the things that we've already funded is what we call the REALM program, Recovering Enables a Life for Men. Excuse me. It's modeled on RAP, Women Recovering with a Purpose. It'll be run out of our jail, out of the community corrections side of the jail. But we've funded that for 18 and 19. The next request that will come forward will be to fund the hub. And the hub is sort of, you know, if you can think of it, just as the name implies, I mean, it's the center of the wheel around which all these activities will circulate. And part of what it's a response to is the notion that there already exists a fair number of treatment programs and educational programs and activities associated with, you know, trying to alleviate the heroin issues that we have. But we need to find a way to sort of navigate through. And so if you have an issue, you know, either for yourself or somebody in your family or a friend, and you just like to have somebody to talk to. How do I get to there from here, kind of a thing? That's what the hub is designed to do. And this will be located at the United Way building on 13th Street. And we'll have a funding request that will come forward before the City Council and the County Council, probably yet this year. And so we're kind of excited to see that roll out as well. But the number of educational prevention treatment programs that we have up and running is around 40. I mean, it's some of them are pretty small. You know, you might have a church or a school that wanted needed $1,000 or $3,000 to have some kind of an educational program. I mean, as long as they meet the criteria, you know, that'll be funded. But it's been pretty heartening to see the response that the community's had, you know, and realizing that number one, this really is an issue, and then number two, there's some things we can do, you know, and people are willing to pitch in and help. So, you know, it's an exciting time. We got a lot of things going on, but I think we're making progress. So, happy day in Columbus. Another beautiful day. Yeah.